Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, the Department of Justice tells the Texas judge that legislature's efforts to soften one of the nation's most stringent voter ID laws has worked. Well, Texas no longer discriminates against minority voters, and there's no need for any further legal action. Really? Really, Jeff Sessions? We'll talk with Texas State Senator Royce West. Also, while much attention has been focused on Trump's bogus Election Integrity Commission's letter sent to states requesting sensitive voter data, new revelations about a letter the DOJ sent out the same day has voting rights advocates sounding an alarm that voter suppression is on the way. Fact is, it's already here. We'll talk to Stephen Spaulding with Common Cause about this very issue. Attorney generals in 18 states from the District of Columbia have filed a lawsuit against Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos over the suspension of rules meant to protect students and their families from for-profit schools. Also, a new date has been set for Bill Cosby to be retried on assault charges. We'll tell you when that is. Also, another city is purging itself of public tributes to the Confederacy. We'll tell you where. Part two of my sit-down with legendary New Orleans chef Leah Chase. You won't want to miss the great stories and wisdom she shared with me, including the famous faces who've eaten at her restaurant, Dookie Chase. Plus, I'll speak with R&B group Jagged Edge. They have a new unsung set to air on TV One, plus a new album. We'll see what's in store with all of that. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Well, guess what? We have the Department of Justice under President Barack Obama, who chose to go after Texas when it came to their voter ID law. But Texas has certainly found a friendly face in terms of Donald Trump's Department of Justice. They have decided that Texas is pretty good. They've solved all of the discrimination issues. You might recall several federal courts ruled in Texas that their law, their voter ID law, had a discriminatory intent. That it was blocking more than 600,000 people from getting a voter ID. The Obama Department of Justice sided with plaintiffs, saying it was indeed discriminatory and that action should be taken to prevent that law from coming into practice. Well, guess what? Trump wins, Sessions become Attorney General, and they say it's all good. Everything in Texas is great. It's all working out. Critics say that is a flat-out lie. Let's go right to Texas right now with Royce West. He is a state senator there from Dallas. He joins us via FaceTime. Senator West, always good talking with you. It is amazing how the DOJ now looks at this voter ID law. In your estimation, you're one of 31 state senators. Has Texas fixed its problem?
Absolutely not. There was no pause in that. It's absolutely not. The Senate voted 21 to 10. We had one Democrat vote for that particular bill, but you can be assured that it was all along party lines. They, again, decided not to take any amendments being offered by Democrats whatsoever. That was one of the issues that was noted by the court in previous rulings. The fact is that they put in some provision called reasonable impediment, but that reasonable impediment is subject to interpretation. It's a problem looking for a solution. It's a solution looking for a problem. That's all it is, Roland. And so we know exactly what this is. This is the beginning of attempting to do exactly what you said at the top, deal with issues or do issues of voter suppression throughout this country.
This is what the DOJ said in their statement. Texas's voter ID law both guarantees to Texas voters the opportunity to cast an in-person ballot and protects the integrity of Texas's elections by dramatically reducing the number of voters who lack acceptable photographic identification. And, of course, that's what they say. But when you look at this particular bill, they lay out that utility bills, bank statements, paychecks, folks also must sign an affidavit swearing there was a, quote, reasonable impediment that kept them from getting a valid voter ID, and voters who lie on the affidavit could face felony charges with a maximum of 2 years in jail.
That's, That's exactly right. I mean, you know, and so when you have that type of quote unquote criminal penalty, then people are going to think twice about putting down anything that they reasonably believe was an impediment. And it, obviously that ends up being a situation where a election judge or a voter or an election director within a particular county can then kind of look at that particular reason and then in hindsight determine whether or not it was reasonable and then make that person subject to criminal prosecution. A lot of people won't do that.
And we talk about voter suppression. What we are seeing in a minute, we're going to talk about this fraudulent voter integrity commission that Donald Trump has. This is a consistent effort that we have seen since the election of President Barack Obama to ramp up voter suppression. For the first time in 2016, we had a presidential election where the Voting Rights Act was not fully enforced. We have Republicans who are leading this effort. I don't care what anybody says, Republicans are doing in 2017 what segregationists did in the 1960s. They are desperately trying to shave people off the voting rolls by using what they see as legal methods to do so. So if they're able to shave off a few thousand votes here, a few thousand votes there, they want to be able to maintain control and not expand the electorate, but shrink the electorate.
And so it goes right back to what we've said all along. It's we have to win this at the ballot box. We've got to get out and vote. We've got to establish those coalitions. We continue to talk about it. We've got to continue to do it. When we did do it, we saw what the results were. And so if we want to make certain that we fight back, not only in the court of law, but also what's really going to count at the ballot box, then we've got to make certain we get up, get out, and vote. And we've got to remember that a lot of these issues are state issues. You know, that's what Trump is going to do. Loretta Scott King, as you recall, sounded the alarm when she wrote that letter against Jeff Sessions' nomination, I think, as a federal judge, about what type of person he is. Then you be assured that he is following up on all the things that Trump wants to do and all of the warnings that Loretta Scott King gave us concerning him. They were obviously true, and we've got to watch him. The only way we can fight back is through courts of law, and we've got to make certain we turn out the votes in these states so we can regain. Yep. Those legislative offices to make differences in the laws that are passed.
And what you're speaking of is the letter Coretta Scott King wrote to the Judiciary Committee when Jeff Sessions was nominated to be a federal judge in the 1980s, and he was denied that opportunity because of his record. Senator Royce West, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Now let's talk about this fraudulent voter fraud commission of Donald Trump. The Department of Justice last week sent a letter to 44 states on the same day Trump's Election Integrity Commission sent their own letter to all 50 states asking for voter registration information to help them investigate voter fraud, which really doesn't exist. A letter went to state election officials asking them about their procedures for complying with the National Voter Registration Act, or NVRA, when they remove people from voting lists. The letter said they wanted to ensure that states, quote, conduct a general program that makes a reasonable effort to remove the names of ineligible voters from the statewide voter registration list due to death or change of residence. Former DOJ officials say the information they requested is not controversial. But what is so unusual is that the letter went out to so many states at one time. Vanita Gupta, the former head of the DOJ Civil Rights Division, who is now head of the Coalition of Civil Rights Organization, this is what she said. She suspected an ulterior motive. Quote, these two letters sent on the same day are highly suspect and seem to confirm that the Trump administration is laying the groundwork to suppress the right to vote. It is not normal for the Department of Justice to ask for voting data from all states covered by the National Voter Registration Act. It's likely that this is instead the beginning of an effort to force unwanted voter purges. And again, she now heads a leadership conference on civil rights. Now, the NVRA was enacted in 1993 to help people register to vote. It was also known as the Motor Voter Law for requiring states to offer voter registration at state motor vehicle agencies. A Justice Department official denies there was any coordination with the Election Integrity Commission. Joining us right now is Stephen Spaulding, attorney and chief of strategy and external affairs for Common Cause. Also joining us on the panel, Wendy Osefo, political analyst and professor of education at John Hopkins University. First of all, Barbara Arnwine, Of course, the founder of the Transformative Justice Coalition, and we have Shannon Wright, third vice chairman of the Maryland GOP. Here's what's interesting when you see what's going on here. It's one after another. Now we have Kris Kobach now lying and changing his story in court, saying, oh, no, we're now only going to hold this information on computers in the White House. It's not going to be anywhere else. And you're going, this makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Roland. It's really troubling on many fronts. First of all, we know that Kris Kobach, the vice chair of this commission, has really been the architect for voter suppression across the country. He is the mastermind behind some of the strictest forms of photo ID identification. He's demanding that citizens provide documentary proof of citizenship, their passports, when they register to vote, making it much harder to access the ballot box. That's one issue. And then you also raise now the national security issue. So, you know, he sent out this letter, his commission sent out a letter, and we've seen a bipartisan rebuke by more than 48, well, about 48 states have said they're not going to fully comply with this request because they can't trust that voters' private data is going to be safeguarded. So there's all kinds of legal issues that have popped up, privacy implications, whether they even have the authority to ask for this information. And to think that it's going to be held at the White House under Vice President Pence's control is incredibly troubling. And I think it lays out exactly what you were talking about, that this is another brick in the road to making it harder for eligible Americans to vote.
And what they are doing is, again, this is all about shaving votes off. Go to my iPad, please, Shelley. This is a piece that was in ProPublica. They talked to a 30-year legislator in Wisconsin, Dale Schultz, who said, one, he regretted his votes when it came to the voter bill they passed, which voters would have to produce certain types of identification. Early voting was reduced. Restrictions on absentee balloting were implemented. Time frames for how long people had to be residing in the state before they could vote were lengthened. Yeah. He says in this piece that he challenged his fellow Republicans to provide him with proof of voter fraud. They could not. They kept saying, oh, they're busting people in from Chicago. No proof whatsoever. And he said he had his own staff partner with former journalists, and what they discovered is that two cases of voter fraud, both involve Republicans.
You know, that's voter fraud. Look, no one wants fraud in our elections. We all want modern, secure elections. The issue is, I think the real fraud is you have these politicians that are manipulating the rules to make it harder to vote. You know, no eligible American should find themselves kicked out of a polling place because they didn't produce the specific form of ID that some politician is requiring, a specific form of ID that we know disproportionately affects communities of color, disproportionately affects the elderly, disproportionately affects students, and it's really un-American.
But here's the piece, though, and this is what I think also has to happen. I'm going to go to our panel in a second. This is where elderly whites and young whites are going to have to stand up, because the only people who seem to be aggressive, I'm talking about in terms of the people, aggressive in talking about voter suppression, are African Americans and Latinos. But voter suppression is impacting whites in this country as well. We saw a clerk in Wisconsin in 2016 say point blank she was not going to have an early voting site on a college campus because too many young folks there were voting. They moved it off of campus. That impacts young whites.
Absolutely. I mean, it affects Americans across the political spectrum. Young, old, black, white, rich, poor, everyone is affected by these laws that are, again, intentionally designed to make it harder to vote, to put up barriers to the ballot box. We are seeing, there is some positive news. There are states that are making, that are reducing these barriers. Just last week, right before the 4th of July, Rhode Island passed automatic voter registration. Illinois passed automatic voter registration. Ways that we can modernize our elections so that people can vote the way they should in the 21st century.
Wendy, Barbara, Shannon, again, I know somebody at home was probably saying, all right, man, you guys do this story a whole lot. But the reality is, I don't think what people understand is how pervasive this is when you say we're going to reduce early vote. North Carolina, the federal court said they had a laser-like focus of African Americans. Well, they specifically asked, when do black folks vote? Mm-hmm. They came back. They said 70% of black folks vote in the first week of early voting. Mm-hmm. So what did they do? Reduced all early voting in the entire state to only one location for the first couple
That's
of
right.
weeks. And
right.
so, again, this is very targeted. And we're seeing it state by state by state by state mm-hmm. by state.
Mm-hmm. This is another example of how the Trump administration continues to unilaterally and systematically roll back the civil rights and civil liberties of people in this country, and especially minorities. We cannot continue to underscore that point any more than we are saying today. Furthermore, with every stroke of the pen, they are showing, and this administration continues to show, that they do not care about the rights of black and brown people in this country. And that needs to be said. And I think what Roland said that's really important is this has to be not just individuals who fit those protective classes of black and brown individuals. This also has to be a conversation around individuals who consider themselves allies, who consider themselves Americans, saying this is a democracy and we cannot have anybody. We're talking about Russia. Let's talk about the people within this government. What are the people within this government doing to make it so our democracy is weakened? So we cannot do this anymore.
Barbara, I'll say this. You've heard people say that Russia is the biggest foe to our democratic institution of voting. I disagree.
It's Trump.
The biggest opponent to democracy in our election is the Republican Party.
Well, let's just be very clear. We said from the beginning that Jeff Sessions never should have been confirmed, that he would create a Department of Injustice, especially when it came to voting rights, when it came to civil rights, and look what he's done. The Department of Justice in the Texas case should be in there saying, put the Texas under the jurisdiction of the federal courts for ongoing preclearance for any voting law that they come up with. When they're intentionally discriminating against blacks and browns and poor people, they should be under federal court supervision. That's what the Justice Department should be doing. The second thing is that the Justice Department, this whole urging of people to follow the NVRA to distort what the National Voter Registration Act is, an act that I helped to write. Listen, the bottom line is that this purging of voters should not be occurring. We need voters to be able to do their work and to be able to participate in our democracy, expand the democracy, not restrict it.
Shan, this goes beyond the Trump administration. We saw a few years ago in Maine where voters said, we want same-day voter registration. The legislature comes back and votes to remove it. The voters had to get a petition, put it back on the ballot in 2016 to say, no, we want it. They didn't ask anybody. They just said, we're going to do it. We're seeing this in state capitals, in Iowa, in Florida, in Michigan, in North Carolina, in Alabama. So this goes beyond Trump. This is a clear Republican Party plan.
See, I hear you, and I expect you to say that. But as a Republican, I can't go along. I don't agree with that.
But the
and
facts
tell
are there.
You what. Let me tell you why. It is not just Republicans, and I'll tell you why. In Baltimore, in the past election cycle, there was primary. Votes were certified. There were irregularities. The votes were uncertified, decertified for every vote on the ballot in the city of Baltimore. There's no Republicans elected in Baltimore. There haven't been any in over 70 years.
No, here's what I'm talking about, Shannon. I'm talking about legislature after legislature passing laws, not just voter IDs. You saw Ken Blackwell, who's on this Integrity Commission, when he was Secretary of State, when he was also the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney Re-Election Committee, where they then said, oh, no, the law says that the weight of the paper has to be a certain weight. So if it's not 70 pounds per whatever, and it's on 60 pounds sheet of paper, that's invalidated. That was Republican Secretary of State. We are seeing in Iowa Republicans moving when it comes to voter ID. We're seeing it in Michigan. We saw the head of the Republican Party in Pennsylvania in 2012 say out of his mouth, Mitt Romney will win because of voter ID. When they got sued, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania had to file a document with the court, and the document stated, we have no proof of voter fraud, and they said, even if we had this voter ID, that would not guarantee there'll be no voter fraud. Every time, Texas, when they got sued, they went to the courts and came up with 12 cases of voter fraud, of suspected voter fraud, in 10 years. An analysis has been done showing that you can get hit by lightning more than when it comes to voter fraud. Now, please explain to me why Republican legislature at state after state after state is implementing voter suppression.
I don't think it's being looked at that way as voter suppression.
What are you? Shannon, it's happening.
I'm not saying that the way you see it is incorrect, but what I'm saying is the perception from folks and why they're doing what they're doing is not quite the way it's being presented.
Steven.
You know what's amazing to me here? The Supreme Court, when they gutted the heart of the Voting Rights Act just a few years ago, this was the first presidential election. Even the majority of the Supreme Court said discrimination in voting exists. No one doubts that. And this Congress has done absolutely nothing to look into the issue. We had the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Bob Goodlatte.
Republican Bob Goodlatte from Virginia.
He said,
who will not schedule even a hearing to discuss
he
it.
He said, nobody's presented any evidence. Well, we went down to Roanoke, a huge coalition of organizations went down to Roanoke to say, we have the evidence. The evidence is in court. As you said, a court just recently said with surgical precision these bills have been enacted to discriminate against voters of color. That is the purpose of most of these laws. It's very clear. It's right in the legislative record. And unfortunately, we have a Congress that could act. We have a bipartisan bill to strengthen the Voting Rights Act, to respond to the court, to modernize it. And we've seen nothing. But unfortunately, at this point, I think the courts are going to be the first line of defense until people get out and vote.
Shannon, I'm sorry. I don't know how you cannot see this is a targeted effort by Republicans in state after state to suppress voters. It is clear. The evidence is clear. And we're not talking about one state or two or three or five or 10. We're talking about state after state. When it comes to folks in Florida removing folks from the voting rolls who actually were legally able to vote. When you see what happened in Alabama and Mississippi and Texas, you're seeing it all across this country. Don't even attempt to say this is not by design by Republicans. It's clear. It's clear. The evidence is there. Stephen, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. We come back, we'll talk about AT Attorney General suing Betsy DeVos over the issue of for-profit colleges right here on News 1 Now TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
More drama for Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. 18 attorneys general in the District of Columbia are suing her for suspending rules put in place to protect students from abuses by for-profit colleges. A lawsuit accuses her of illegally canceling an Obama administration policy set to take effect this month that protects students from predatory loan practices in higher education. The policy would help erase federal loan debt of student borrowers who were defrauded by for-profit colleges. The attorneys general want a U.S. District Court to declare the Education Department's delay of the rule unlawful. Massachusetts Attorney General Mara Healey is leading the lawsuit. She said this, since day one, Secretary DeVos has sided with for-profit school executives against students and families drowning in unaffordable student loans. Her decision to cancel vital protections for students and taxpayers is a betrayal of her office's responsibility and a violation of federal law. Secretary DeVos has called her decision to rescind the policy a regulatory reset. Let's go to our panel here. Shannon, I'll start with you. There are numerous for-profit colleges the Obama administration shut down that were essentially screwing students. They were sucking up money from federal loans and shoddy education, folks not able to even get jobs. And it makes no sense that DeVos would say, oh, let's do a reset. And these for-profit colleges are all excited, and we know she's working for a president who had a fake university, who got fined $25 million for having a fake university.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really kind of disappointed and concerned about the way the Department of Education is going. When you look at our urban cities and you look at poverty, you look at poor folks, you look at folks that are underskilled, the only way out of the hood is education. And when you do things that limit and just make it so much harder to be able to afford and get quality education, you might as well say, okay, I'd rather pay for entitlements that you talk about you want to cut out than help pay for you to get an education to be able to take care of yourself. That, to me, does not make sense.
The problem here, Barbara, is that many of these schools, again, what they're doing is they're public. Some of them are publicly traded companies. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're focused on just getting more and more students in. They're not getting quality education, and they're just saying, okay, if you keep racking up student loans, we'll keep taking your money. And what the Obama folks said, no, let's stop it from happening. What DeVos is saying, oh no, let's just look at it all over again. The evidence is there.
Well, it looks too much like pay to play. Mm-hmm. Really, honestly, it looks like this is a deliberate attempt to help these schools to make money, that this is basically their kind of lazy fare, you know, philosophy of this administration, like the buyer beware, caveat emptor, all the rest of it. They're back to, you know, these early 1900 type concepts. And what we need to do as voters is that we need to be holding our states accountable. It's a shame that all of the people who are suing Rowan are Democrats. This should be a bipartisan issue. There's no doubt that Republican voters are being hurt by this. Republican, states are being hurt by these for-profits. People are graduating with all. Well, people aren't even graduating. That's the problem.
But it's not just graduating.
They're again, not even graduating.
Again,
loans.
When you look at the numbers here,
yes.
When you look at students taking out so many loans, not able to complete school.
Yes.
And then when they went in and broke somebody, I mean, the Obama administration mm-hmm. shut down several of
yes.
these colleges and put them out of business because they were fraudulent universities.
Right. Absolutely. And as an educator, as a professor of education in a university, this particular situation strikes home for me because I would never put my students in a situation where they have to take out loans and they're not getting a quality education.
Exactly.
Furthermore, let's look at the fact that a lot of the people by the numbers who are taking out the loans, again, I'm going to continue to harp on this, are students of color. So for her to sit here and say that we need to reevaluate this when all the evidence is there, just continuously reminds us why this woman should not be the Secretary of Education to even begin with. And that's part of the problem, is when you put people in positions of power who have no place in that position, they are going to nefariously impact our students, and we're going to continue to have these conversations. And it is time for us to band together in a bipartisan manner to say, no, you cannot do this.
Well, and what's interesting here, this is a, pull this up, Shelley, go to my iPad. This is a story in Bloomberg, April 3rd, 2017. Trump defends Obama's for-profit college crackdown. But what's interesting is that these for-profit colleges, their stock prices went sky high in anticipation of Trump becoming president. Mm-hmm. Even though he made this point here, now you have DeVos saying, let's reassess all of it.
Well, it's no different than what we saw with private jails, right?
Absolutely.
Their stock went up also.
Absolutely.
I mean, because this is the public policy of our country right now. Mm-hmm. It is to lock people up and not educate them.
Mm-hmm. See,
people need a quality education.
If the education that they were talking about with all this predatory lending for these loans for education produced someone that graduated with a quality education that was able to be employed mm-hmm. in
yes.
any field or in the field they went to school for, that would be one thing. But when you have folks that don't know the difference, that are getting these loans and that are coming out of school still not with the skill set to be employed in the field they think they're going to be able to be employed in, for me, that's the problem. If you want to charge what you want to charge, then at least provide what it is you're charging for.
Absolutely.
And again, under the Obama administration, they shut down ITT technical schools.
Mm-hmm.
There also were a couple of other for-profit
yes,
colleges they also shut down. And so we'll see what happens next with that. Still ahead on News 1 Now, date has been set for Bill Cosby's retrial on sexual assault charges in Pennsylvania. We'll tell you about that when we come back. Also, I sat down with the queen of Creole cuisine, Leah Chase, who had some fascinating stories when it came to cooking for various presidents. Now, she has also some culinary advice for President Trump when it comes to him eating steak. Yeah, he might want to listen.
The first step is
right
to
here.
Join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Protesters around the country are stepping up their pushback against the Senate health care bill. Sit-ins and protests were held around the country yesterday, including outside a town hall meeting held by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Republican lawmakers have been receiving major blowback against the bill in their home states, and McConnell, who can only lose two GOP votes to prevent the bill from failing, acknowledges that he is having difficulty getting 50 votes in favor of the bill. As of now, 10 Republican senators are on record as not supporting the bill, either because of the cuts in Medicaid funding or because the bill doesn't go far enough in destroying all aspects of the Affordable Care Act. Bill Cosby will be retried on assault charges in November. The 79-year-old comedian stood trial in June on three charges of aggravated indecent assault for allegedly drugging and sexually molesting Andrea Constant at his suburban Philadelphia home in January of 2004. The judge declared a mistrial after jurors were unable to come to a unanimous verdict on any of the charges following 6 days of deliberations. Although Cosby did not testify in his own defense at the trial, he and his attorneys acknowledged that while sexual contact between the comedian and Constant did occur, the relationship was consensual. Cosby's new trial date is set for November 6th in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. It is now much tougher to prove employment and housing discrimination in the state of Missouri. Missouri Republican Governor Eric Greitens recently signed a bill that raises the standard for workplace discrimination lawsuits by requiring people to prove that race, gender, disability, or age was the motivating factor for disciplining an employee rather than just a contributing factor. Supporters of the new law say it will make the state more attractive to businesses and curb frivolous lawsuits. The Missouri State NAACP, which opposed the bill, calls the new law a setback for worker protections and civil rights in Missouri. Another city is purging itself of public tributes to the Confederacy. After a protest last week at Hollywood, Florida's City Hall that resulted in several arrests, city commissioners tentatively agreed to rename streets honoring Confederate military generals Robert E. Lee, John Bell Hood, and Nathan Bedford Forrest. All three streets run through the entire city, but Hood and Forrest streets run through a predominantly African-American neighborhood. The Hollywood, Florida City Council will take a final vote on the street name changes after its summer recess. Bennett College has announced its new president. Phyllis Worthy Dawkins will be the historically black all-female North Carolina College's 18th president. Dawkins has served as Bennett's interim president since August. Prior to that, she was the school's provost. Bennett College says with the interim president tag removed, Dawkins' goals are to increase the student enrollment and retention, plus bolster academic offerings and increase funding. Bennett has been having some serious financial issues as of late, and so we certainly wish her good luck in all that she is trying to do to get them back on board. All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, we'll hear from Leah Chase. She is the queen of Creole cuisine. When I was recently in New Orleans, we had a sit down with her, and she talked about President Barack Obama doing something to her gumbo that personally offended her. Plus, the new season of Unsung kicks off this Sunday with R&B group Jagged Edge. They'll be joining us to talk about their experience filming this episode. It is 22 before top of the hour. News 1 Now, TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now.
All right, folks, of course, last week we were in New Orleans for the 2017 Essence Festival, and I could not pass up the chance to visit the historic restaurant Dookie Chase and sit down and chat with the legendary chef Leah Chase. We talked about food, the famous folks who visited her restaurant, and how she got started.
In 1945, I met Dookie, and it was unbelievable because I didn't like musicians at all. Mm-hmm. Hated musicians. I didn't like them at all. I liked people like boxers and people with physical strength. Mm-hmm. And here comes this little musician. And then we came in here, and I just came in with my mother-in-law and tried to, I said, no, on this side of town, we're gonna do just what we did on the other side of town. Only difference in people is color their skin, not ruling. That was so stupid. Because you have different cultures.
Right.
You eat different things. You're different. And I like being different.
Nothing wrong with being different.
Nothing wrong with being different. I like being different. So I said, we're going to change. First thing I put on the menu, lobster thermidor.
And black folks said, where y'all get her from?
Yeah, that's what they say. Oh, she's gonna ruin you, Emily. My mother-in-law name is Emily. Emily, she's just gonna ruin you. Who in the world want that? So I had to back up and start doing the thing that I knew how to do, like stuffed chicken breast, maybe with oyster dressing and jambalayas, shrimp creoles and things that people like to mm-hmm. eat.
What is it about food that is just totally different than anything else?
You know, people come to my kitchen, Mr. Martin, and they ask me that all the time. It baffles them. What about your food? What is this? I don't know. We do, and they come to New Orleans and they think they're going to eat here and eat different. We eat just about the same thing, whites and blacks alike, because that's the way we came up. And I think it's just how we do things, and we believe in making a lot over what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, the Creoles of color didn't realize how important that cooking and that sewing and the plastering and the carpentry. They took it for granted. They just did it. But it was masterful work. They took time, and it tastes good. It tastes good. So, you know, when I came in the kitchen, big restaurants were not serving jambalayas and things like that. They were serving French food and things, cream sauces, shrimp Newberg, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So then everybody started coming to eat what we cook and the way we cook it.
And all of a sudden, we changed them.
We changed them. You know, in this restaurant, I feel right in this room and in that little gold room, we changed the course of America. Because all the freedom riders that left from here, like Rudy Lombard, Dodie Simmons, and all those people that are at the castle, those people that left here, they would meet here before they would leave. All I would do was serve them a bowl of gumbo and some fried chicken. They would make their plans, they would go. Come back, clean up, bowl of gumbo and fried chicken. So I'd say we changed the course of America over a bowl of gumbo and a fried chicken. We need to tell that to Mr. Trump. Give him a bowl of gumbo and some fried chicken.
Give him a bowl of gumbo and some fried chicken.
That's right.
Right. And he might act right.
He'll act right.
How many presidents have you fed?
I fed two here. And Mr. Clinton, I worked with him in Atlanta because he was a friend of the Aarons, Hank Aaron in mm-hmm. his life. So he would come to Hank's birthday, and that's where I met him. He is something else. I met Mr. Clinton. And when they introduced me to him, if you see that picture, I need to put it on the wall, you would think he knew me for 100 years. He didn't know me at all. Didn't know me, and I didn't know him. But that's how much charisma the man right. had. And then I fed Mr. Obama, which was a delight.
And who was the other president?
George W. Bush.
Really?
Now, let me tell you about George W. Bush. Wasn't our best president by far, but a nicer man you could not find. Mm-hmm. He never hit this city unless he sent for me, Roland.
Really?
Every time he came, he sent for me. So when he came, he sent the security for me. And we were having dinner at Commander's Palace. I get there to wait to say, well, look where you're sitting, Miss Chase, right next to him. He always sat me right next to him. I don't know why, but that's where I was sitting, right next to him. So when I was at the dinner, he said, do you want to fix breakfast for me? God, no, I don't, but how you tell the president no? You don't tell the president no, you say, yes, I'm going to fix this breakfast. The man came the next morning with the president of Mexico and the prime minister of Canada. No fanfare, no nothing. And the pictures on the wall out there, I cooked them quail and grits and shrimp. Oh, he loved it. But he was just kind to me, and I still hear from his people.
But we'll tell that Trump fella, maybe some food will change him. All he does is eat McDonald's and eats his steak with ketchup.
Oh, Lord, ketchup.
He eats steak with ketchup.
Oh, my God, he would, ask Mr. Obama about Mr. Obama and ketchup. No, Mr. Obama came here. And first thing he could do is order his gumbo. That's all well and good. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm a fried chicken. Chicken can hold on the plain cold. You can. He sits down with his gumbo, and he takes the hot sauce in my gumbo.
Hadn't even tasted it yet.
I said, oh, Lord, Mr. Obama, you don't put us up in my car.
He didn't even take us in yet? Oh, no, no. My daddy would cuss me out if I did that.
So now the neighborhood, you know how my neighbors are. Some of them were good, good people. Some of them were the worst people in the world, but they were my policemen.
Right.
They were everything to me. So they said, Ms. Dookie, you told him right. Don't be messing up your gumbo.
Now, I take it he didn't do that again.
No, he didn't do that again. He never forgot it because the world knew Mr. Obama put hot stuff in Liz gumbo.
What's up with the art in here? So you had this commissioned, the glasses?
Well, yeah, the glasses were done when we moved in here in 1984. I wanted a divider there. And I wanted visibility for the waiters when they'd go down the hall, they could still look here. Mm-hmm. So I did what I said, we'll put stained glass. Well, poor Dookie. You know, Dookie said, good, I like stained glass. He thought I was going to do church windows or something. When I came up with what I had, he said, told the children, I think your mother's crazy. Your mother's losing her mind. Who in the world wants that? But it tells the story of my childhood.
And then you got all this other art in here. So are these friends of yours?
Friends of mine.
People?
I am fortunate to have been friendly with Elizabeth Catlett, was my dear
friend. Wow.
Sabella Lewis, John Biggers, Jake Lawrence. So I was lucky. And artists never have food. They want food. So we swapped. I came out on the good end.
There you go. So you said, hook me up with a painting. I'll hook you up with some food. Oh, yeah, you came out. I'm sure there's some art dealers who come in this place.
Yeah.
And they say, hey, can we talk? And you said, no, you can't touch that one.
Can't touch none of them. Because, I never put any emphasis on value. It's what they mean to me. I feel like when I look at the upper room, I feel like John Biggers is there with me.
Mm-hmm.
John Biggers was the nicest man. His admiration for women with
Texas
strength
Southern University
was unbelievable. He was just the kindest, gentlest man, and he depicted women as hard-working people.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that about it. Well, you know, Elizabeth was just Elizabeth. She was one of the best sculptors you're going to run across. She's really good, and she liked fried oysters. So when she came, Elizabeth always came for her fried oysters. Lena Horne always came for her fried chicken. Sarah Vaughan always came for her stuffed crabs. So Lionel Hampton was the trip. Lionel would come and you had to feed him in little bowls. Little bowl of greens, little bowl of sweet potatoes, little bowl of...
Because he knew he was going to eat a lot?
So he ate it all in little bowls. So, but they were
so you've seen everybody through here.
Everybody. And everybody came and they were just... It just makes you feel good when people think about you.
Mm-hmm.
When they think about you, it's uplifting. That's why I try to do that with people. Roland, one thing I have to do since the storm is get that takeout going. You see, because my neighbors across the street, we had the old ugly brick building, do you remember that? And I said, after the storm, I said, those ugly stack of bricks gotta go. So they picketed, they said, no, they're good, we can keep them. You come live in them, we want them. So they put up what's nice across. But some of those buildings had the finest people that went off to be doctors, and then you had the drug addicts, you had this, but even the so-called worst ones were my protection. No, nobody ever hit this restaurant. Nobody ever came in here.
Mm.
When the storm came, we were here 65 years. Nobody ever, ever touched anything in this restaurant.
Mm.
They were my policemen. They watched out everything for me, and they took care of me.
You're saying you take care of people that take care of you.
Take care of people that take care of you.
On Monday, we'll have the next installment of our interview with Leah Chase. That's 94 years of history right there.
It's so awesome. I love her. I loved him. I love that restaurant. If you go to New Orleans, that's where you go, right, Roland?
Yep.
I mean, that's the only place you go. It is just absolutely a culinary delight.
When have you been, Dookie Chase?
I have not.
Shannon?
I have not.
Y'all gotta go.
I'm gonna go.
I will.
It's mandatory.
I'm gonna go.
Mandatory.
Your black cards are in suspended status.
Uh-oh. Until... No, no, no.
You did not take away the black card.
Your black cards are in suspended status.
Oh, no.
They're in review.
Oh, no. We're all in trouble.
Up next, R&B group Jagged Edge anchors the second half of Unsung season premiere this Sunday. We'll talk to them up next. News 1 Now, TV 1.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, new season of TV One's hit series Unsung kicks off this Sunday with a double premiere. The first episode featuring music legend Wyclef Jean will air at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, immediately followed by an episode featuring my next guest, R&B legends Jagged Edge. The first episode featuring Wyclef Jean, again, 9, then Jagged Edge follows them. Let's talk to these guys right now. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good, man.
Awesome, man.
No complaints.
All right, we're talking to Wingo and Brandon Casey. Before we chat with you, here's a bit of their Unsung.
You don't want to make the money. Who the hell, you know, who can stop you?
A lot of cars, a lot of money, a lot of jewelry. There was a whole lot of excess going on.
Bunch of girls in this room, bunch of girls. Use your imagination. It went down, all the way down.
We're gonna get drunk, we're gonna get high, like everybody, the entire crew.
At one point, I was going out 5 nights a week, you know what I mean? Drinking 5 nights a week. So, I mean, ultimately, like, it became a lifestyle.
Kyle, he had no limits. Brown liquor would send him into a tirade where you wouldn't even know. That's Kyle.
I got 2 DUIs in a week. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was a crazy time.
All right, Wingo and Brandon, I was talking to Lionel Richie after the death of Prince, and he said, look, I want to be one of the last folks standing. He said, forget the drugs, the alcohol. He talked about Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and Prince all dying in their 50s. He said, no, I want to be the last one standing. It's about longevity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
You know what, Roland, I think, you know, as like the names you just named, they're a lot older than us. And we've actually come into that same way of thinking, you know, in our late 30s.
Definitely.
So I think, you know, like Lionel Richie, we want to be here too. We want to still be standing and still be, you know, seeing our fans when we 60 plus.
Right.
You know?
And obviously you were on a path of that not happening.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We had to straighten up fast, man. You know, we're about to put out our 9th album. You know, we're doing the whole Unsung thing. And you know, we couldn't have made it to our 2nd album, you know what I'm saying, without the grace of God, man. And, you know, just, you know, him being with us. But, yeah, we got a little wild for a second. But, you know, we just had to tone it down, man, and bring it on back in. Bring it on back home. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Wendy, your question.
More so a comment. My older sister, Ivy, is one of your biggest fans. And I just want to share with you guys that one of my greatest memories is my parents dancing in the middle of New York City to your song, Gotta Be. And my father passed away 2 years ago. But I just want you guys to know that you guys are now a part of my family history, because every time I hear that song, I just think of the love shared between my mom and my dad. So thank you for making that song.
Oh, hey cuz, how you doing?
We aim to please, man. That's what we always wanted to do, just, you know, be a part of, you know, memories and, you know, history and, you know, be a household name, you know?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting when you think about, look, I know the guys are a New Edition, love those guys. And look, when they walk on the stage now, I mean, audiences go crazy. You have a whole generation of people who know your music, and it's sort of like the Temptations, they still perform. The OJs, they still perform. The Spinners, they still perform. Dana Ross was killing it at Essence on Friday night. And the bottom line is, you know, longevity. I mean, you know, again, when you have that core audience, I mean, you could keep doing this thing like Eddie LaVert is 75 and still doing it.
Exactly.
You know, when Uncle Charlie Wilson came out with his last album a couple years ago, I actually put a post on my Facebook like, if Uncle Charlie doing it at 68, we'll be with y'all for another 30-some years.
I'm telling you, we ain't going nowhere.
If God willing.
If God's willing, definitely.
Well, you guys have a new album, and of course, that album is dropping. It's called Layover. Certainly good luck with that, also with the Unsung. And I wouldn't be shocked, like a lot of the other Unsung shows we had, where your bookings will greatly increase after Unsung airs.
Let's go, baby.
Look, we booked to November, but we can take some more.
I'm sure you can. Folks, Jagged Edge, again, Unsung airs this Sunday right here on TV One. Gentlemen, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Good talking to you, bro.
Love y'all.
All right, thanks a bunch. We'll be back on News One Now on TV One in 60 seconds.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time. My girl, 7th Streeter, turns 31 years old today. She's dropping a new single today. I saw her on Instagram last night talking about it. Gospel singer Tasha Cobb, Break Every Chain.
Yes.
She turns 36. Basketball Hall of Famer Lisa Leslie, big school choice supporter. She turns 45. Actress Cree Summer, you can catch her, of course, on A Different World right here on TV One, turns 48. Where's she at? I ain't seen her in I don't know how long. On this day in history, 1984, Prince topped the pop and R&B charts with When Doves Cry, which went on to be the best-selling single of the year. Monday in News One Now, Dr. Umar Johnson lit up social media. We're going to talk to him on the show about him and his history. Holla!
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.